Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Stephen Leckhart. Stephen is a writer, director, and investigative journalist. He's written a handful of documentaries, including Silicon Cowboys, and has contributed to various magazines, including Wired, Esquire, Men's Health, Maxim, and Popular Science. Stephen is also the co-author of Cabin Porn, a New York Times bestseller about hand-built architecture. Hi, Stephen.
Hi.
Yeah, hello, Stephen. You forgot to mention on your resume that you were actually the first editor of Cool Tools after me. And that's how we met, because for a number of years, you actually were editing Cool Tools.
2.5 years.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to the kind of cool tools that you're going to talk about today.
Yeah, it was an amazing part of my life to spend 2 years kind of tapped into everything that you guys see on a daily basis. It's just really incredible.
I'm going back through a lot and reposting a lot of the old tools that were published while you were the editor. And it's great seeing the early days of Cool Tools and the kinds of things that people were recommending back then. There were some really great ones.
Yeah, I mean, that also was just my first editing job. So it was really like, here's the keys, don't crash the car.
And you did great. No, it was really fantastic. I think the site improved tremendously, and I was really happy, sad to see you go. But you've done so many other things that I'm really excited by that. So now we're kind of making a full circle. You're back here talking about some cool tools. What do you have in store for us?
It's been 10 years since I left the site.
10 years.
Which actually leads me to my first tool that I'm going to recommend, which is this wooden back roller. Which is something that 10 years ago I did not need, but now now I need kind of almost like every day to take care of my back, my lower back and extremities.
How does it work?
Well, so you guys have recommended the Theracane before, and mm-hmm. I even recommended the Trigger Point foam roller. This is slightly different. So where the Theracane is kind of for your shoulders and little, you know, sort of singular points on your back. And the Trigger Point foam roller is mostly for your legs and lower extremities. This roller has these two kind of like almost like little ridges in the middle. And if you lay on your back and put this roller underneath it, it situates on either side of your spine. So then you basically roll slowly along your spine, and it hits all of this sort of like, you know, myofascial release points all along your spine from the top of your, you know, sort of the base of your neck all the way to kind of behind your pelvis. And it's incredible. It's like the equivalent of going to see a Rolfer if you've ever done, you know, deep body work. But this is much cheaper.
And I guess it works on the same principle. You're applying pressure to these places, except that you're using your body weight for the pressure instead of someone's thumb.
Yes, and it's $28 instead of, you know, a $75 body work session. And you can, you know, you can travel with it. You could do it anywhere. And it's wood. I like having things made of natural materials around, and there's something about that that's great. It's not, you know, it's not plastic. It's not going to break over time. You leave it out in the sun, it's not going to warp or have any problems.
Really nice looking.
You say that you travel with it. So it looks like a kind of like a rolling, it's like a deformed rolling pin.
Yeah, it's a deformed rolling pin that's shaped kind of like a messed up hourglass, I guess is the best way to put it.
Mm-hmm. So it's not going to take up a lot of room in your luggage.
No, and it doesn't look nefarious. So if you're traveling to foreign countries, they're not going to pull it out of the bag. It doesn't look like a weapon. You know, so you'd have no trouble getting through security. And it's made out of wood. It's not metal or plastic.
Oh, let me ask you this, Stephen. There's a 5-inch model and a 15-inch model. Which one do you have?
I have 15. I don't see 5 being kind of wide enough to comfortably sit on that lower back area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the extra 10 inches is worth it.
Okay. I'm looking at the 5-inch model, and it looks like it's not really working too well on people's, they're not using it for their back. They're like using it on the back of their head and the palm of their hand and their leg. Oh, well, here is somebody using it on their back. But anyway, yeah, it's much smaller. But for traveling, maybe some people would rather have that smaller one.
Maybe, but I think there's also something about the width supporting the entire weight of your body. Mm-hmm. So it had the wider base probably is going to do a lot more supporting on your spine, whereas 5 inches is really going to be a much more intense sort of pressure on that lower back.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so you'd use it and kind of like roll yourself over it a couple times, takes maybe 15 minutes in total.
Yeah, sometimes only 10 minutes. And sometimes I don't even roll that much. I just kind of find a spot and then just sit there. Mm. So it's really comfortable. My kids think it's funny. My wife my wife forbids me from doing it in front of company.
Naturally.
Yeah. She was horrified. I mentioned to her, so like a year ago when I was having some sort of lower back hip trouble, I mentioned that I was in this one office and they had a yoga ball. So I was stretching on the yoga ball all the time. And she was horrified. She's like, "You didn't do that out in the open, did you?" I said, "Yes. What's the problem with that?" And she said, "Many things are wrong with public stretching." So,
not quite like flossing your teeth, but I guess maybe some people I might object.
Yeah. I don't
so what's
know.
A, yeah? What's another one on your list?
I use this site called Trint.com, which is. So transcription is something as a journalist I've been doing for 16 years, and I started doing it with microtapes, you know, micro cassette tapes by myself, and then have gone all the way to doing like Amazon, you know, Mechanical Turk. And I've then found a person up in Washington who's a private, you know, she's just a person who will transcribe. And over the years, it's very expensive. It's time consuming. And what I love about Trint is that it's super cheap and it does automated transcriptions using AI. And it's not, you know, as you can imagine, it's not incredibly accurate depending on what kind of language is being used, but it's incredibly fast. And then you can kind of, it populates a page online, almost like a Google document, and then it has time codes in it. And you can click from one word to another, and it'll replay the audio that's sort of matches to that word or phrase. And so you can listen through or click to any words that look funky and then immediately change the text in real time.
Wow.
And it's a fraction of the cost. And, you know, when you don't have money, especially on documentary films where you're sort of self-funding, something like this is a real boon because you can do transcriptions really quickly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether you or, you know, someone else or an assistant can pop in, it doesn't take you as much time to go through the entire transcription. You know, a 60-minute interview is a really long, strenuous process of playing and replaying. This allows you to sort of listen once and you just quickly change the text. So you can get through a 60-minute interview in maybe 20 minutes.
And it's, you say the text, is that in Trint or is that sitting on your desktop? And because I know sometimes the AI companies like you to make the changes on their side so they can learn from it.
Yeah, you make it in sort of a Google document style window, but then you can download the transcription as a Word document.
Okay. So I've been using Temi, which is another AI transcription service. It's cheaper. It's only $6 for 60 minutes, but it gives you a timestamp, but it's not synchronized in the lovely way that Trint apparently is, where you can actually hear it from the Word doc. That's really wonderful.
Oh. That's interesting. Yeah, this is great because it highlights as it reads.
Right, right.
So you can follow almost like the bouncing ball what's being said, and then you can really, if you need it to be super accurate, you can just literally listen and watch the text.
So if you want something half the price even of Trint, you could use this, but you don't have that same ease of listening to it on the fly, which I think is really worth the money that you're mentioning here. $15 for 60 minutes, that's great.
I would love to take two files and put them to each service and see how accurate they are right off the bat. Mm-hmm. That would be really fascinating.
We did that a year ago. A year ago, Claudia, my researcher, did that. We tried five different AI services with the same text right now. And so I've been using Temi simply because it was cheaper. I didn't know about Trint, but maybe I should go back and check that out.
Yeah, I'm also curious to see how the prices change over time, if it will continue to get cheaper as it gets more accurate or more expensive. I don't really know what the sort of business strategy is there.
I don't either, but I think eventually some level of it will become free, and then there'll be the premium model of there's, I think, Review, which we use, Mark, for our podcast. Is that correct? We use Review to make transcriptions, which is a human, but you can get a AI version of it that a human looks at.
Right. We use, actually, it's called rev.com.
Oh, sorry, Rev. I'm sorry, yeah. Rev.
Yeah. And it's a dollar a minute, so $60 an hour, and it's pretty darn good because
that's the human.
Yeah, it's all human.
Yeah. Yeah. But Rev has a AI version where it's AI, and then you can have a human kind of look over it. It's like mm-hmm. AI plus or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know about that one.
Yeah,
that sounds cool.
So that's a great one. What's another, Stephen?
Yeah, so I started traveling like crazy in 2014-15, and I hunted for a bag that would suffice, that would be sort of would hold up to the elements, that would be, look nice, but not look super necessarily outdoorsy, so I could stay at a nice hotel and not get, people gawking at me when I walked in. I didn't want a roller suitcase because oftentimes I also have to tote other gear, so I need my hands to be free. And I found this 45-liter backpack / duffel bag that Patagonia makes that is just phenomenal. I've since traveled all over the world with it. It's super comfortable straps. It's made from like this ripstop polyester, so it's super durable. Like all things Patagonia, if you ever have a problem with it, a strap breaks, a pocket knife accidentally cuts open part of the bag or whatever happens, you can bring it back to them and they'll either repair it or replace it. So it's just a phenomenal bag. It's water resistant. And it was like $120. And it's by now it's the best backpack I've ever owned.
And can you carry it on your back? Does it have two straps that allow you to kind of make a pseudo backpack out of it?
Yep. It has two straps. And unlike a lot of bags where they sort of have to tuck in place and you have to zip it out and pull it out, these always just kind of hang outside. But then it has sort of duffel straps that you can kind of put over them if you want to have it just be a pure duffel. I've honestly never had to check it, even on a puddle jumper.
You've never had to check it? I mean, it's carry-on.
Yeah, I always carry it on. Because I don't, oftentimes when I'm reporting, I really can't afford to lose luggage. And I needed to find something that could just be crammed underneath the seat. This has fit in every single plane I've ever been on, including, little two-seaters.
Wow. Yeah. I've never, it seems like there's kind of two versions of the rugged traveler type of luggage. One is the duffel. The other one is sort of, at least a backpack. I find carrying the duffel in my, it's not a comfortable way to carry something. But you're saying you may have other things that you have to carry with your hands, like if you have a second piece of luggage, or what are you carrying in your hands that you need to also carry your bag in your hands versus on your back or on a roller?
Yeah, well, I mean, for me as a documentary filmmaker, the last time I flew back from a shoot, they gave me, a case of lenses to bring back as well as drives. And, so all of a sudden you've got a roller plus your backpack plus possibly, another small case to carry. Uh-huh. And sometimes those cases aren't rollers, so you need your hands free to be able to sort of lug them with two hands. So I hardly ever use it purely as a duffel. I always kind of put it on my back. But it's nice to have the duffel straps to be able to sort of quickly pull it in and out of a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was on a documentary shoot as part of it, and it was amazing the amount of gear that's being lugged around that you would never even guess. Just cases and cases of stuff. Because of luggage requirements, they assign anybody affiliated with this is shanghaied into carrying this stuff for them.
Oh yeah. No, and also, you know how this goes, the cheaper it is to film, the more you just start loading up on gear and cameras and sliders. And before you turn around, you know, a 12 person camera crew, everybody's got, three suitcases to load around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not just the camera. There's the drones and there's the racks and the time, the time lapse stuff. Yeah. It is a huge production, even with the do it yourself versions.
Yeah. And I found that the more I started filmmaking, the more I started to want to pare down my own pack and travel as light as possible, not just for my own sort of, convenience, but just for the convenience of the production. So, just as few clothes as possible organized inside the bag. I could pack in 10 minutes or less. And I needed a bag that would be kind of the perfect size and not create more problems. So this one, I really can't say enough about it. It's really fantastic.
Great. So what's your final fourth tool for us today?
Well, it's going to sound really like basic, but I use this Contigo stainless steel mug. It's vacuum sealed. It's insulated. I've been using it kind of like I got it around the same time as that backpack. So I've been using it for 4+ years. And the thing's incredible. It's 16 ounces. It keeps coffee hot. I'm always kind of amazed at how many people you see in airports who don't have their own coffee mug with them or tea mug. you go to a Starbucks in a random airport, your coffee stays hot for maybe 15 minutes. And you're sipping it down quickly, or you're just let it sit there long enough, it gets cold. And there's nothing like being on an airline and actually having a hot cup of coffee 2 hours into the flight, even if, there's turbulence and a flight attendant is nowhere nearby.
That's great. And also, I just bought one actually, because it's been recommended by a lot of people on Cool Tools before. Compared to a lot of stainless steel mugs, it's pretty inexpensive.
Yeah, this, and it's getting cheaper too. I mean, the one I have is $15. And it doesn't have, so some of them have like handles built onto them. And that makes it difficult to put them into certain, cup holders. It also makes it more difficult to pack. I really like this one because it's very streamlined. It's very easy to clean and it has a lock on the top. So I've never had it leak. So I've put hot liquid in it. I screw the lid, flip the lock switch, and I toss it into my duffel and it's never once leaked.
That's incredible.
That's pretty cool. That's great.
Really nice. Yeah. $15 for the 20 ounce or a 16 ounce is $15.
So it's a stainless steel vacuum. It's a vacuum seal. That's where the insulation is coming from. And it's not heavy.
No, it's super lightweight. It doesn't add enough. It doesn't add much space to the pack either, which is great. And there, Zojirushi makes one that supposedly, its heat retention is supposedly better than this. But it's $26. So I save $11 and, there's my first round of airport coffee.
There you go. Stephen, you're a writer and you have a new article in Chicago Magazine. Sounds pretty cool. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I've spent 4 years working on this story, which is a really long time for me, but it's a special story. It's about a guy by the name of Tom Justice. And when Tom Justice was a teenager in the 1980s, he was picked to go to the Olympic Training Center in Colorado because he was a Olympic hopeful track cyclist. He was one of the fastest young teenagers in the country. And his trajectory should have been that he would go to the Olympics a decade later. But instead, he decided to become a bank robber. He found he was very good at robbing banks. He robbed 26 banks in 3 states over 4 years. He netted over $120,000 of cash. and he always used his bicycle as his escape vehicle.
That's amazing. How did you find out about this story?
So I wrote the story with some guys who founded Epic Magazine. Mm-hmm. And one of those guys, his neighbor, actually wound up with the bicycle. So when he was, when Tom robbed the final bank, I don't want to give it away too much, but obviously he gets caught. When he robbed the final bank in Walnut Creek, he actually fled the scene on foot and got away from the cops, but he left behind his bicycle. And the bicycle was a custom road bike built by a guy by the name of Brent Steelman in Northern California. Steelman at the time only made 50 bikes per year. And although Tom bought the bike used, they ultimately, the police, you know, managed to trace it back to him. Then once his case was adjudicated, the bike was sold at police auction and then wound up in my, you know, my friend's neighbor's hands.
Wow. This just sounds like a movie.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to write it as much, you know, visually and scene driven as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this is the stuff of, you know, the best narrative journalism to me should feel like a movie.
Right. Right.
So you can read it and tell me.
Also, you mentioned Epic and one of the Epic guys, Joshua Behrman, also writes stuff for Wired. He has an article that's in the latest issue of Wired that's really good about eccentric meteorite hunters chasing after a meteorite that recently landed in Peru. And it's like an 11,000 word story. I just wanted to
Josh is both a great friend and a mentor of mine, and he's, you know, just a phenomenal writer.
Yeah.
And so it's that's good reading for a good evening's reading for someone, is to read your article about the Olympic bike rider turned bank robber and the crazy Peruvian meteorite hunters.
And your magazine article will be coming out in Chicago Magazine in February. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the February issue. So I would imagine it'll hit stands and then hit online probably, you know, in the next couple of weeks, late January.
Yeah. People should track it down.
Yeah, I'll send you guys a link.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. That would be great. And then we'll include it in the
show notes,
for this. Steven, so great to hear from you and get an update after 10 years about the kind of tools you're using.
Yeah. Thank you. It's actually wild to hear you say it's been 10 years. It doesn't feel like 10 years, but I guess it has been.
It's been a long time a lot of tools under the bridge, but we're always really eager to hear what you're using, and some great picks, things that I didn't know about. Thanks for joining us, and I know you're going to be doing interesting things in the future. You got a lot of documentary work and movie work, so maybe we'll have you back and you can tell us some more.
I would love that.